This is SQPN, the StarQuest Production Network, leading the way.
This episode of The Secrets of the Hobbit is brought to you by Bluehost. Start your own blog or website in minutes for the very low price of just $6.95 per month. Bluehost makes it really easy. One-click installation of your blog, you get your own .com domain name, and no worries about bandwidth. Go to sqpn.com/bluehost for more information. And by the Amazon store. Click on the link on our website before you shop at Amazon, and your purchase will help support our show.
sqpn.com presents The Secrets of the Hobbit.
There and back again. A Hobbit's Tale by Bilbo Baggins. Now, where to begin?
Welcome back again to another episode of The Secrets of the Hobbit. And guess who is back again after 2 weeks of missing in action? My good friend Dave Kale is right here in The Secrets of the Hobbit. How are you, Dave?
I'm back again. That's how I am.
You were there and back again.
Yes.
And we've got a lot of news to catch up on. Last 2 weeks, we've been talking about the production video with Inge, my co-host from Secrets of Middle Earth. That was a lot of fun just to go over this production video like second by second. And it took us 2 hours to try to dig up all the hidden stuff in there. And it was a lot of fun speculating about what we saw and also, perhaps in some cases, we got it totally wrong. We got a lot of feedback on those episodes. But in the meantime, of course, there was also a lot of news, a lot of exciting news about The Hobbit, which we want to share with you today. And Dave, I am so glad to have you on the show as like the big Wikipedia, the walking Wikipedia encyclopedia of the world of Tolkien, because I've got a ton of questions linked to a number of, let's say, kind of spoilerish information that was released on the web. But let me ask you first, just to give us an update on the most important news of the last 2 weeks.
Which news would you say that is?
I have no idea. Just
you want to know what I think is the most important?
Yes,
news.
Absolutely.
Oh, I would say the biggest thing I've heard in the last 2 weeks. Which isn't necessarily the most exciting or interesting or thought-provoking thing, but it's probably the only real news, was a comment by journalist Ann Richardson, who interviewed Benedict Cumberbatch a ways back. I'm still unsure when the interview actually happened, but what I've read is that it happened before the trilogy announcement, so we're supposed to take this comment with a grain of salt, but she interviewed Benedict Cumberbatch.
Mm-hmm.
While he was doing his, as they say, doing his rounds for the upcoming BBC miniseries Parade's End. And so she asked him, how much of him we will see in the first outing of Jackson's epics, obviously the first film, which for currently at least is titled An Unexpected Journey.
Mm-hmm.
And his response was, I think my eye might open at the end of the first film, and then you'll get the rest of me in the second. So
I love it.
Yep. Keeping in mind that this may have happened, he may have said this before the trilogy announcement. Although I bet the actors all knew before that. But anyway,
I think so too.
With a grain of salt.
But I do believe that for the first movie, everything was already set in stone, and even the decision to split up the rest of the story into two movies is not going to impact much of the plans for the first movie. So I guess this is a pretty much a confirmation of what I presumed would be the end of the first movie, where the company of Bilbo and the dwarves would arrive in Lake Town, and then the camera, in some way or another, would fly up to the mountain, enter some, you know, system of tunnels, and end up at the dragon. And this totally makes sense that the first glimpse that we get of the dragon is this eye, because mm-hmm. of course it's kind of this is the counterpart of Sauron in the Lord of the Rings trilogy, and now of course the big evil is personified by this dragon, and to have this eye opening, and I wouldn't be surprised if the eye even looks or reminds us of the eye of Sauron in the trilogy, and I think we speculated about this in the past that there might even be And I don't know how explicit this is going to be, but I wouldn't be surprised if Peter Jackson will somehow infer that the dragon is not acting alone, but that there is some deeper evil behind him. And so that there might be somehow kind of an evil connection between the dragon and Sauron or the necromancer. But then again, it could also just be a parallelism. But I think it's great that the last image will be this eye-opening experience.
I'm gonna throw a wrinkle in.
Sure.
Which I don't actually believe, but I just wanted to point out he didn't actually say. He said I. You know, he referred to himself. My eye. He didn't say Smaug's eye. And he is technically playing two characters, the necromancer and the dragon. So.
Yes, yeah, you're right. So it could be the necromancer, although that doesn't really make sense.
I'm pretty sure he doesn't have an eye at that point.
Well, we still don't know what he looks like.
Yes, exactly.
Although,
and if they're going to be consistent with the book, he's supposed to be like a kind of a, you know, sort of nebulous cloud, dark cloud thing, kind of like a Black Rider.
You think so? I didn't know that there was actually a description of the necromancer by Tolkien himself.
Not really a description, but kind of he refers to him essentially having no form before he returns to Mordor. Hmm. Yeah, there's several points where they describe him returning to Mordor after he was in Dol Guldur, and then creating for himself a new shape. So as far as we know, he doesn't really have a shape, or we don't have much information about what shape he has. So
as long as it's not the lost cloud on the island, you know, in the TV series,
yes.
Lost. I hope they won't do something like that.
Hey, maybe they could get the guy who played the cloud in the later seasons.
I hope it's going to be something more with fire instead of smoke, but it's just because of that eye, the way they depicted the Eye of Sauron. I imagine that it would have to be something, at least a little bit, it should have some form, but I don't know. It's one of the things that is, I think, one of the best kept secrets of this new trilogy is, like, what will the necromancer look like? Because there are some other characters that we didn't know what they looked like, and that's what my big, like, news item was from this past week, and that is we've seen the first official picture of Radagast,
yep.
The Brown,
and the wall calendar.
Yes, the wall calendar. This was revealed on a website. ThorinOakenshield.net, and someone ordered a calendar for 2013, I suppose. And one of the image, so the calendar is not, you can pre-order it, I think. And that calendar has an official image. It's not really a photograph; it's more of a painting. So it's more, it looks like concept art of Radagast the Brown. And so we've seen, of course, the actor. Sylvester McCoy in many even in the latest production video, but we never saw him in costume, and again this whole episode is going to be filled with spoilers, but I just assume that everyone who is listening to this actually, you know, enjoys the speculation, and we can't speculate about, you know, about things that we can't talk about. So from now on, we're just gonna just pass on what we found out about the movie. Just a disclaimer for new listeners. So the image itself shows a brown character with a very elegant beard, very quite long beard, but lots of curly hair in the beard. Looks like kind of grayish beard, gray white beard. And in his right hand, he carries a staff that is very reminiscent of Gandalf's staff. And actually, I think we've seen this particular staff in the latest production video, number 8. If you listen back to our previous episode where I was talking about this with Inge, in one of the green screen glimpses that we got, someone is holding a staff, and it's very reminiscent of Gandalf's staff. We were both like, that is not Gandalf's staff. So it has to be someone else's. And we didn't make the connection with Radagast the Brown, but it makes total sense. Because these two are actually colleagues, right?
Right.
But it's a little bit more like his staff looks a bit more alive, a little bit more unwieldy compared to Gandalf's staff. Both are look very organic, but this one slightly more, well, perhaps, I don't know, characteristic of Radagast himself. And then he's wearing what looks like a kind of a brown coat or mantle. It's pretty hard to make out. His left hand seems to be carrying a glove of some kind. And looks like a very hot costume. Literally, they're very warm to walking around, but also pretty good for camouflage because it's all brown and earth tones. So probably hard to see him in the forest. And then he's got
a goofy looking hat.
Yeah, he's got that weird hat, which I thought was looking very similar to one of the hats that we saw in the dwarves. Like
one of the dwarves has a hat like that.
Yeah.
In fact, it's Bofur. Bofur has a hat that looks like that.
Yeah. So
there he is in an image from the wall calendar, just right next to Radagast. And yep, that's him.
So the same hat. Perhaps there's the same hat maker in the area that they went to.
It looks like the kind of hat you would get if you were living like in the Canada.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah, like with these like, flaps, you know, that you can put over your ears if it gets really cold. I have a hat like that. I went to Winnipeg a couple of years ago, and it was in the middle of winter, and so they gifted me a hat like that because I only had like I wasn't prepared at all for the cold over there, and so they gave me this brown hat with these strange ears on it, which you can put over your own ears. Looks very goofy. I never dare to wear it over here in the Netherlands. but it's pretty cool. So anyway, that is amazing that we've seen the first picture. I don't know if this was intentional, like an intentional leak, or the fact that it's just artwork and it's not a photograph tells me that they were actually preparing to reveal his character much later in the game.
That's a good point. So I think you can wear your hat around now because it's now cool.
It's going to be. I might actually put it on when I go to the premiere of the movie.
Yes,
it's going to be all fancy. I'm going to put it up on eBay.
Because Radagast the Brown's going to be the cool character. He's not going to be just comedy relief, I'm sure.
We'll see. I think it's going to be pretty comical. And I just can't wait to see how that character will be brought to life. Because it's a very different type of character compared to Gandalf. And yet both of them are wizards. And so it's just great to see the diversity in the White Council between all these wizards, basically.
Mm-hmm. So did you... did you see? Have you been following the Return of the Ring stuff?
Loughborough. I heard that there was a video, a thank you video by Peter Jackson.
That's right.
That he made for that conference.
What's into your Skype window.
What was the conference about? Is this just a general Tolkien convention or?
Yep. Uh-huh. It's called Return of the Ring. It was held in. It was held at. Loughborough University, and last week, essentially, the 16th through the 20th of August, and they had guest talks. It sounds very similar in feel to MythCon in the sense that it's a combination of academic stuff. So they have a lot of talks and presentations, but then also a lot of fun. So gaming and parties, artwork and live music, costume, people wearing costumes, all that kind of stuff. It sounds pretty awesome.
Great.
Yes. And so this year they had Michael Tolkien was there.
Kidding. Michael Tolkien. And then you get this video message from Peter Jackson.
Yes.
Like the arch enemy's face. Face off.
That's right. No, well, but I think Michael Tolkien, who's one of the, you know, who's Tolkien's grandson, I think he's probably, my understanding is he's kind of the black sheep of the family. Like he doesn't get along with his father, Christopher. He might not even be, I have to look him up again.
You know,
I remember what his
speaking of this, a little sidetrack here, but I read this article. You've undoubtedly also seen it. It was one of the rare interviews done very recently by a French newspaper with Christopher Tolkien, and they also talk about the movies. I thought it was an amazing interview, just so mm-hmm. interesting to see his take on this. And he kind of comes across as a bit of a grumpy old man mm-hmm. who is definitely doing, you know, he dedicated his life to the preservation of the legacy of his father. And he just feels that Peter Jackson kind of betrayed that legacy. And there you can tell that a lot of the sentiments towards the negative sentiments towards the movies and the Peter Jackson's take it's very emotional, and it's because he's so attached to the work of his father. But he also made a couple of points that I thought were very interesting for the whole discussion about, you know, whether between purists and Peter Jackson fans. And it kind of opened my eyes. He said, you know, one of the problems of the way that the franchise has kind of taken off and is now completely out of their control is that the way that the universe and the stories are depicted are getting further and further away of the intention of my father, what he actually tried to convey in this story. The you know, for him, it wasn't an action story. He told this story to convey deep values and a certain culture, and all that kind of gets lost in the fights and the special effects. And I was thinking of the video games that came out recently, you know, the hack and slash video game that we talked about, the mm-hmm. War in the North and stuff like that. And I kind of see his point. I mean, that is, you know, that couldn't be further away of the intention of Tolkien. And it is reducing the story to something, you know, very, very primitive. And even Lord of the Rings Online, which is a game I love to play, but you know, most, if you see the emphasis of that game, it's so different from what the books are all about.
It's running around and killing dire wolves.
Yeah. but at the same time, there were lots of interesting comments underneath the translation of this article from people that said, you know, but it does not mean that the films or the games or whatever are diminishing the impact of Tolkien's writing. Actually, it has opened a whole new venue and a whole new created a new threshold for audiences to get to know the works of Tolkien. And don't underestimate the audience, you know, don't think that they are going to be fooled by these movies and games and think that it's just that. Most people will actually be motivated to read the original works from Tolkien and discover like all these other layers that are in that story. And I tend to agree with them. And I think the numbers show that, and Christopher Tolkien himself actually confirmed that since the movies came out. I mean, the sales of the books were going through the roof.
Yes.
And so it was a whole new revival of the interest for the original works of Tolkien. So,
yes, I agree with that standpoint. I sort of, like you, I see both sides of it.
Mm-hmm.
I generally agree that the films and then the subsequent other things that have been created, video games and board games and whatnot, that they don't carry the same sort of philosophical and thematic weight that mm-hmm. the books have. I mean, it's sort of how could they?
Yeah.
And I think that was always, when you read Tolkien's letters, that was always his thing, that if what you're trying to do is make a really, really faithful adaptation for the screen, it's just hopeless. Like, you just don't have a chance. There's no chance of
yes.
doing it. Maybe he would feel a little bit differently about like an HBO miniseries similar to the Game of Thrones one. Mm-hmm. Maybe that would be a little bit better just because it has more time. But but it's pretty hopeless. But does that mean you shouldn't make any film at all? And that there's something to the idea that some people have said, which is that his goal was to make a modern mythology for England.
Mm-hmm.
And if you know, one of the primary characteristics of mythology is that people start retelling them, and they take them and make it their own, retell it and change it.
That's the nature of this whole ancient oral tradition, where you take a story and look at fairy tales and how they've been retold over time, and even now in a series like Once Upon a Time, they take these old stories and give them another twist. And I think that's mm-hmm. kind of it. That's the way the cookie crumbles when it comes to stories.
Yeah, and so in some sense, if what you're setting out to do is make a mythology, you can't later complain when people start taking it and retelling it. And in the retelling, are some things lost that were good? Yeah, but sometimes things are, you know, new things are added or new insights are gained by doing it. On the other hand, I think that it's perfectly fine to judge each work on its own merits. Do I think that the Peter Jackson films for Lord of the Rings are stand up to the books in terms of the thematic weight? No, but that doesn't mean they're completely hopeless. And you make a great point, which is if there's like the vast majority of fans out there didn't watch the film and decide that was enough for them or that they like that. I prefer that to the books. Most people watched them. And if they hadn't already read the books, they ran off and read the books.
Yeah.
And began a lifelong love of these things. And within a few years, they were reading the Silmarillion and buying buying the histories of Middle Earth and reading every footnote. And it's hard to argue if the film's what brought them to that. How could you argue that the films have had a bad impact? And I agree that some of the rampant consumerism around it, like some of the video games that have been churned out that are just, you know, devoid of any, you know, not even talking about whether it has the same themes as the books, but they just don't have any deep themes whatsoever. They're clearly just rampant consumerism. Yeah, that stuff's pretty kind of annoying and upsetting, you might argue, but I don't think it diminishes the books. The books still stand up. You can play those games and decide, well, that was crap, and still go back and read the books and enjoy them. So
I think he's
making a useful commentary on society in general, just like this sort of that these media companies buy a property and just do it over and over, you know, and just keep trying to get money, wring money out of it. But I think that he, with regard to the Tolkien stuff, he's a bit of a cranky old man.
Well, and of course, if you read, because that's the other reason why I like this article, when you read the background of how they lost control over the franchise. I mean, it was in a time when the Tolkien estate was not doing well, and they just needed the money to, I don't know, preserve even a house or something. It was like they almost had no money whatsoever, so they sold the rights to the Lord of the Rings and to The Hobbit for almost nothing. I mean, if you look at it now, it's like, wow, that is just dirt cheap. I would have bought it for that price. And then, of course, once you sell it, it's gone forever. And they just did not realize at the time what they were doing.
Yeah.
And of course, they could have struck better deal nowadays. But
yeah, the difference between when you line up the story of the Tolkiens with the story of J.K. Rowling, there's a clear lesson to be learned, which keep control and stay involved. I feel like what's been done with the Harry Potter franchise has been much more carefully monitored by J.K. Rowling, and that she, you know, I personally, some of the films, I'm like, I didn't like the way that was done, but she seems to be happy with it. And so, So for you aspiring authors out there who might be the next Tolkien or J.K. Rowling, keep some control and stay involved with what people do with your stuff.
Absolutely.
Michael Tolkien, just briefly, he's the grandson of J.R.R. Tolkien. He's the eldest son of Michael H.R. Tolkien. So he's not Christopher Tolkien's son. And he's a poet, and he does sit on the board of the Tolkien Company. So he's not I think he's actually pretty actively involved, but not – I think he's not as negative as Christopher is. Mm-hmm. I think Simon Tolkien, who is a lawyer and a novelist in Britain, is the son of Christopher. And my understanding is that he's actually somewhat estranged from the estate. Hmm. But in general, I understand that the younger generation of Tolkiens, like his grandsons and great-grandsons, are generally much more open to people adapting – their grandfather's work. So
it's going to be very interesting to see how this will spin out. I mean, Peter Jackson just recently said that the Silmarillion will be never made into a movie, at least not probably while he's alive, because of the fact that those rights have never been sold. But then again, you know, generations change, and so who knows?
That's what somebody from when I met some folks from Warner Brother Interactive last year, that was one of the comments that they had made, that they knew that some of the younger Tolkiens were actually big video game fans, and that they're cautiously optimistic. I mean, it sounds terrible because what they're saying is we're just waiting for Christopher to die to get out of the way. But they're cautiously optimistic that in the future they will be able to get access to some of these properties and to be able to do some interesting things with them.
But I was just, you know, even though I wouldn't take Christopher's position, but I do now understand much better where he's coming from, and that I do believe that it's much more than just crankiness or kind of a jealousy that these people make so much money and the Tolkien estate does not benefit from that. I do believe that his motivations are much deeper than that, and he feels that he's responsible to preserve kind of the also the message of these books. And yeah, I think it's useful
to have him as a counterweight to the giant media companies that are trying to exploit these things.
Absolutely.
Like, that doesn't mean that I agree with him 100%, but I think it's good to have him around.
That voice should be heard as well.
Yeah.
I think that's great.
So hey, I dropped the link to the video.
I've got it here in front of me. Is it long? Can I play it?
I think you can play it. I'm not sure how long it is.
Okay.
It looks like it's about a minute, actually.
All right, let's listen. See what happens. So this is Peter Jackson, Alan Lee, and John Ho. Here it is.
Hello and greetings from New Zealand. Just like to apologize for not being able to attend this weekend. It would have been a great occasion to be at the 75th anniversary of a book that we all know very well and love. We're a little bit busy down here in New Zealand at the moment. A little busier than we thought we were a few weeks ago, actually. And I also have to apologize for keeping John Howe and Alan Lee prisoner down here in New Zealand for a little while longer as well.
So have a wonderful weekend.
I second that.
Men of few words, but sharp but
many
pencils.
Many pictures.
many pictures, yes.
Many pictures.
We're still a bit dazed. It's all this being held prisoner business.
One day
not used to not sitting in front of a drawing.
We'll release you one day, don't worry. When your work is done. Hey, have a great weekend. Right, see ya.
Thank you, bye-bye.
That's funny. It almost feels like an impromptu thing. Like, let's switch on the camera. Let's just say something.
Yeah. Or like a hostage video with those two.
Peter Jackson looks a lot more relaxed, though, than before.
What did you think he meant when he said, we're busier than we expected to be?
Well, don't you think that this kind of relates to the whole decision
trilogy
of turning
thing,
this
yeah.
into a trilogy, and then they probably just need more artwork and some, I don't know.
Must be.
They must be
intriguing.
Preparing. Yeah. So I think this is just probably the reason, the fact that they made that decision probably had more ramifications than they expected. One thing is to take that decision and think, oh, we've got enough material, and then you actually start to plan out those movies and you're like, whoa, wait
like,
a minute, we need this, we need
start
this.
Cutting and editing.
Yeah, and then there's always kind of the creative process as well. You know, once you have this opportunity to extend the story, then I'm pretty sure knowing Peter Jackson and the crew around him, they're so creative that it will just tickle them too much to just, you know, go with what they have. And so I think it's actually... This could be very positive, and it might just push them a little bit further, even though it's already pretty awesome what they were able to come up with.
So I just I sent you a link in Skype to a place where there's some photos of the One Ring, Return of the Ring.
Return of the Ring. Ah, I see them all. Pretty awesome.
Nice. You like the one with all the people with torches.
Yeah, of course you got all the musicians and... dressed up in hobbit clothes, and then they're still wearing glasses. Looks like fun.
I'm battling with swords and chainmail.
Yeah.
With shields bearing the emblem of the white tree.
Pretty cool. I'd love to go to one of these fan events. Hey, we need to hurry up and discuss some other big news. One element of that big news you know about. And there is some stuff that I just read on the internet, and I'm pretty sure that you haven't heard this yet. It has huge ramifications for the story. And so let's talk about that after our break.
You're done. Upon it all, Samwise Gamgee, have you been eavesdropping?
I haven't been dropping no eaves, sir, honest.
What did you hear? Speak!
Nothing important. Please, Mr. Gandalf, sir, don't hurt me. Don't hurt me in anything unnatural.
I think that's kind of what most Tolkien fans also hope, is that Peter Jackson won't turn these movies into something unnatural. But there's always the debate, you know, what is he going to add? How faithful is he going to stay to the canon of the book and also the extended universe or the kind of the background that we got from the appendices? And how much is he going to add to the story? How much is he going to make up on the spot? And there was a very interesting bit of news coming from the world of I guess it's like board games or like these figurines, and there was a list of a game company with all the characters that they would be selling for this game. So what exactly do you know more about the kind of the background of this?
I don't know a ton about the background. It's basically, it's a release list from a tabletop miniature company called Games Workshop. That's producing the official Hobbit movie miniatures. Mm-hmm. I don't know where they got the list from, because I found out about it in the forums on theOneRing.net, mm-hmm. and the links they were giving to where you could see this were like from pastebin.com, which is one of those sites where you can essentially paste in like text data and share it with other people and stuff. And it's it's possible that this official list actually, it can't be found on the internet now other than in those corners. But scrolling through this thing, it's kind of crazy.
So it's a description of all these different figurines that they will be selling. And of course, this is for a game, so it does not necessarily mean that all these toys, or I'm not sure if I'm even allowed to call it toys because people take this very seriously, this game.
Yep.
It's not certain that the description matches what we will see in the movie. However, it's detailed enough to make me think that at least part of this is going to, you know, is derived from the actual story of the movie.
Yeah, there's some things that you look at that are obviously what they're doing is inventing characters or things to be used in a game.
Like the mother of Keeley and Feely.
yeah, that's right. So like, you know, some of these things, like some of these creatures that they have in here, tomb whites, mounted tomb whites, vampire bat swarms and stuff.
Well, the tomb whites, I mean, that's something that we talked about. It could be the ring wraiths that are
That's true, appearing. But just the fact that when they have things like that where they are like the spiders, where they have like 18 different kinds of spiders.
Oh, yeah.
it sounds a lot like Lord of the Rings Online, where, you know, you have to have variations of these different enemy character, you know, mob mm-hmm. enemies, so that as you travel through the land, you're not fighting the same spider over and over again. But you're right. Some of them are things that just sound like they probably are hinting at something, like Bolg and the Great Goblin Bodyguard.
Yeah.
That to me seems to get at the possibility. This is something that I'd sort of just off the cuff speculated a while back when we were talking about on Reels in the Dark, when we were talking about Azog and Bolg. And I had speculated that you know, that they were going to want to have whichever orc end up being the sort of the leader of the Battle of Five Armies, whether it's Bolg as it is in the book, or maybe it's his father Azog, who's supposed to be dead.
Mm-hmm.
However they handle those, I sort of speculate, you know, I don't think they're going to want to have it be like the orc commander of the Sauron's army at the Battle of Pelennor, where it's just like this misshapen orc dude who just shows up at the end of the film and you're like, who the heck's that? Oh well, yeah. Who cares?
Mm-hmm.
Or even in the Hobbit book itself, where the goblin army comes riding down and they just happen to mention, oh yeah, by the way, it's led by Bolg, he's the son of this guy Azog. Yeah, it's a long story, don't worry about it. So I kind of figured they're probably going to want to actually have some character development, have this guy recur. So I had this sort of notion, that this horrific notion, that he was going to be reappearing throughout the films, like sort of showing up everywhere where they end up fighting some enemies, like, oh, there he is in, you know, with the great goblin in Goblin Town. Oh, he's somehow he's in Mirkwood fighting with the spiders. Oh, there he is again. Like he'd just be showing up to dog their footsteps. And so anyway, this is kind of – this sounds similar, this Bolg and the Great Goblin Bodyguard. And it sounds consistent with – I think I have actually seen the other thing you're talking about, the German translations, because I was going to say this Bolg and the Great Goblin Bodyguard sounds consistent with that.
Yeah.
With
okay. The description we'll talk about that in a minute. Let's just go over these figurines and see if they're – you know, if we can pick out a few interesting tidbits. So we've got a whole list of dwarves here. And among the list of, among the dwarves, also Samwise Gamgee, Red Book, okay? I didn't know he upgraded to be, or that he was a dwarf in his former life.
Dis, the mother of Keely and Feely?
Yeah, that's kind of weird. I mean, that could only be part of the movies if there's some kind of a, like a flashback or something. And if we see the dwarves when they were still young, but I've not read anything about that. Or nor in casting, there's nothing about that either. So I think that's kind of made up. You've got a whole set of wargs, nothing too interesting there, except for that we will see a lot of orc warg riders. That's kind of like expected. Dol Guldur orc overlords. That's kind of interesting. So they're orc overlords.
Well, what's interesting here to me is so they have the necromancer / flesh avatar.
Yeah, what's that?
Don't know.
Flesh avatar. That kind of sounds creepy, as if he's kind of a blob of flesh.
Yeah, or maybe it's giving us a hint as to what his appearance will be, that he's going to have some human-looking appearance.
Well, you know, that's another thing that we talked about last week when we were going frame by frame through the production video. At one point, you see lots of designs, and a few of them are blurred out. Or this is actually in, I think, one of the makeup trailers. And I was looking at, staring at just one of these blurred out pictures, and it looked like a kind of scary looking bald face of something. And I was like, something just intuitively, I was like, that could be the necromancer. And now that I see this flesh avatar, I'm thinking, could the necromancer be a spirit that takes possession of a corpse or something? So it would be a little bit kind of akin to what we see with Voldemort, kind of in the Harry Potter movies, that when he's not yet totally himself, he just takes possession of another body to kind of appear. So could they do the same thing here, that the necromancer is actually just, you know, kind of has a flesh avatar, but that's not his true form. He's just taking possession of that body and animated.
That's a pretty interesting idea.
In that way, they can visualize it. It can be more than just a smoke monster from Lost, and they can explain it almost theologically, like this is akin to St. Thomas Aquinas about the angels, where he says, you know, angels are pure spirits. So what happens when they appear to people? Well, one of the explanations could be that these pure spirits just kind of take a body for a short time, use that body to, you know, send out their message, and then they leave again. You know? So perhaps that's a way to kind of explain that flesh avatar. And they can make it scary, because it could be almost like a zombie or something like that.
Yeah, he could be like a zombie guy.
He has
to
be
pretty
scary.
That's interesting.
I don't know.
So also Saruman in the Ring Raids. There's a lot of speculation about that. Is he fighting them? Is he colluding with them?
Yeah, I mean, it would be kind of... if they give away that Saruman is somehow involved in this, it kind of breaks the story of the first movie in the Lord of the Rings trilogy, because we would already know that he's bad. Although we kind of discover that quite quickly. But
I'm sure I think there's a possibility maybe it'll be revealed to the audience, but it won't be revealed to the other characters, I'm sure.
Yeah, that has to be, but still. I mean, I think it would be more interesting if you would only discover that in Lord of the Rings that you know, he was truly bad. But
I agree. I hope that they don't. I hope they don't.
Although Tolkien himself in the appendices makes it very clear, that crystal clear, that Saruman is playing a double game here.
Yeah. But nobody knows. You know, the important thing is that nobody knows other than the audience knows, because we have privileged information. So,
and then you've got the White Council is very interesting, because it has a huge list of you've got the Mounted Rivendell nobles, Lindir the Harper. Is that the Lindir, the dude from
Yes, that's Brett McKenzie. He has a name
that's
now.
Awesome, the Harper.
Apparently he has a figurine.
And Arwen
and Estelle.
Yeah.
By far the thing that jumps out, or at least that jumps mm-hmm. out that you could imagine this having some kind of role in the film. Like, there's Kirdan the shipwright, but well, actually, I guess he is on the White Council, so maybe he might show up. That'd be cool. I'd love to see him on screen. But Arwen and Estelle, a lot of people are like, oh, maybe we'll get to see Aragorn now.
I don't think Arwen is going to be in there.
No, I think you're right. I think this is pretty good proof that this is an example of something that clearly won't be in the film.
It's not nonsensical because, of course, Arwen is alive at the time of The Hobbit. She's just not part of the story.
Yes, and she's not in Rivendell this time.
No.
She's actually in Lothlorien. But more importantly, there has been nigh a word about oh my gosh, I've forgotten her name now. The actress who played Arwen.
Yeah. Arwen.
What is wrong?
Liv Tyler. Thank you, chat room.
Yeah. And she was one of the people that was like plaintively saying, I want to be in the film if at all possible. So if she was in it, we would know. So
I think so too.
Anyway. But Kirdan the shipwright, that's exciting. I want to toss out Elros and the Rivendell Outriders. This is not Elrond's brother, Elros.
Okay.
This is, I believe we discussed a long time ago that there was a leak of a character named Elros, and that people had, you know, there had been a follow-up to say, no, this is not Elrond's brother. This is just an elf we're making up for the film who happens to be called Elros.
Yeah,
but it's not
like
Elrond. Because
we've got several Johns in the world.
That would be horrible abuse of the story to have Elros show up, because he elected to be mortal and died a long time ago. So so that's not his brother.
And then you've got Radagast's chariot, so that's another confirmation. That's the bunny cart.
Cart.
and then big spoiler / revolutionary thing, if this is true, and there are more indications that this is going to happen, Azog wounded, Azog and the Orc Needlers, and Azog. Isn't he supposed to be dead? However, there are indications that Azog is not dead. We'll get to that in a minute. But and then hill trolls, frenzy trolls. I suppose those are the stone throwing hill trolls.
Yeah, maybe.
I don't know.
Or maybe just
trolls.
Characters that are adding in. Yeah.
The man of Esgaroth. I don't know any of these characters, actually.
So King Geryon is one of the kings of Dale. So he's not this. He might appear in a flashback.
That's the whole thing. They have to show Dale quite extensively because they built this huge set. And so I'm pretty sure that we are going to see some kind of a backstory of Bart the Bowman or something. And they will kind of spin out this whole Dale before the destruction thing, just so that we are more emotionally involved when it actually gets destroyed. And this list of the Men of Esgaroth kind of seems to confirm that we will see, you know, Dale-based characters as well.
Mm-hmm.
So King Geryon might be one of them. Fram the Watchman.
Yeah, these characters, Master of Lake Town, Bard, Bane, Alfred.
Yeah, and then you've got
actually Lake Town guys.
And they're more Bowmen. You've got Bard and Greystreak. So I don't know if this is part of something that we will see in Dale, and then we will kind of get to know how Bard actually became the Bard the Bowman that we now know.
Yes.
Town guards, foot soldiers. This isn't the first confirmation that I've seen of that Dale will feature probably more heavily in the film than it does in the book. Anyway. So and then we've got the Grey Mountain Dragons, so lots of creatures. Well, that is probably not too interesting. It's
Beaufort on Cold Drake.
Yeah.
Oh, I can.
Beaufort riding one of those worms.
This has to be the game. Can't be in the film. That would just be ridiculous.
Don't think it is. Now, let's go to the Beornings. You get the Woodman Healer, Fair Daughter, Meneldar, Swiftbeak Rock, Gorm, and Woodman Axe Thrower, Skin Changers, Whisper Bark, Gnarl, Fear, Black Bear Pack, the Enraged Bjorn, Grimbjorn. Yeah, it's weird.
So Grimbjorn is Bjorn's son, I believe.
Ah, okay.
Whisperbark and Gnarlfur. That to me sounds like an ent. Kind of wondering if we're going to get seen.
Could be. And Mineldor is an eagle.
Yes.
And Swiftbeak probably also.
Yeah.
So it's just everything related, I guess, to animals and forests and stuff. Then you've got the Sylvan Elves, Legolas, and the Mirkwood Fire Archers, Mirkwood War Host, King Thranduil in battle garb. Interesting, yep. In battle garb. So this could be part of the elves getting involved in the Battle of Five Armies. Kind of weird. Toriel mounted. So we're going to see Toriel on a horse. I hope, not mounted on a barrel. And Castellan Emroth. It all sounds kind of legit to me. That this is part of the movies.
Mm-hmm.
And then there's a whole set of adventure figurines.
Yeah, I don't know what this... These are like little vignettes or something?
I don't know. It's like... These could be scenes. So Gandalf's Quest, the Battle at the East Gate, the Fall of Dale, the Bell Tower, A Thief in the Night, the Clearing of Foul Roots, Assault on the Barrows, Clash of the Beasts, The Last Stand, The Raven Hill, Thorin's Folly, The Battle of Five Armies, Breaking the Siege, Revenge of the Goblin King, Black Soil Slope, The Final Onslaught, The Clouds Burst, The Ritual, The Haunted Tombs, The Blight Breach, and Gollum's Escape. That last one. There is an episode of the Riddles in the Dark podcast where that is actually, I think, one of the questions, isn't it? Like,
yes.
Will we see Gollum beyond the riddle game or not?
Yep. Will he get out? And it's increasingly looks likely that he's gonna leave the Misty Mountains and he'll be involved somehow.
They just couldn't resist it, right? They had to bring Gollum in the other two movies as well.
Yep.
Not that I'm complaining, but it is definitely invented. Tolkien doesn't allow it, doesn't approve.
Well, it's an interesting point because it's something that Corey speculated, Professor Olson speculated, that maybe given a chance to sort of go back and retcon and rewrite The Hobbit to incorporate into the larger world, that this is something that Tolkien might have considered doing. Because it is a little – it's kind of strange that it takes Gollum like several decades to leave the Misty Mountains in order to pursue Bilbo.
That's true.
It's an interesting idea. So the last couple, Frodo with Red Book.
Uh-huh.
Okay, Smaug the Golden,
it's kind of
what we expect. Gandalf dual sword. All right,
that is totally possible because we've talked about this before as well. That Gandalf is going to be portrayed much more like a serious warrior, and he's going to be much more fierce than in the Lord of the Rings, at least in the first movie.
So the last one I thought was really interesting and exciting is Turin the Dragon Slayer. This is, of course, a character from the Silmarillion, from the First Age, and he slew like the sort of first greatest dragon, Glaurung. And what I thought was interesting about it was that there's this reference in The Hobbit where Smaug, you're getting an internal monologue of Smaug, and he awakes from a nightmare, and it's like a common nightmare that he's had before of a warrior with a great sword stabbing him and killing him, and he hates it. And there's many interpretations of this that some people say this is a reference to the original, to Tolkien's original plan for his story, which was that he was actually going to have Bilbo kill Smaug with his sword. And he does have, kind of a great sword. He has an elven blade. But there's other people, including me, I'd put myself in this camp, who see this as sort of a racial memory of the dragons, that they all have, a lot of the great dragons these days sort of have this sort of racial memory of how Glaurung met his end. Glaurung's sort of the father of the dragons, and Turin kills him
Wouldn't it be cool if we would see that dream instead of just, kind of hearing him talk about it? I think that this is another occasion to expand the story.
Yes.
And show us a very cool fighting scene that might even be cooler than, the Bilbo's confrontation with the dragon.
I think it's probably unlikely this would make it in because it would just be something potentially that would just go, it maybe be too much, they have to explain what's going on. But even if it's not, I think it's an awesome like reference that they included, that the game, the tabletop game guys included it in their miniatures.
Yeah.
You know, like, that's pretty cool.
Or what?
Cool.
What if that eye that is opening is the eye of the dragon after he's had that dream?
Could be. Maybe maybe that could be the opening for the second film. It could be
a big
like a
fight
flashback.
And, yeah, who knows? Interesting. Well, I want to spend the last 8 minutes on this other bit of pretty impressive news that was published a while ago on a German website.
What's happening out there?
Shall I describe it to you? Or would you like me to find you a box?
So let me describe it to you. This was information, character information, published by Warner Brothers on, and we have an American version, an English version, which is kind of like, misses a lot of the information, but it was published in German. And this is pretty, I mean, I'm pretty sure that this is official Warner Brothers information about the characters. And so the German website, HerrDerRingeFilm.de, has the text, and it was translated in English. Now, the big shocker is that not only does it contain lots of information about all the dwarves, including, I think, details that are giving away certain things that we will see in the movies, but there is information about about Azog. And this is what it says about Azog. It was said that Azog the Desecrator fell many years ago in the great battle between the orcs and the dwarves. But now he appears again at the top of a deadly horde of killer orcs. For Gandalf begins a race against time because he has to figure out the connection between the most dangerous orc commander and the growing evil, which takes shape in the ruins of the fortress of Dol Guldur. One thing is totally clear. No one will deter Azog from his intention to destroy Thorin Oakenshield's companions to the last dwarf. Tum, tum, tum. I mean, that's huge. Azog is alive. He is alive. Let's get into the DeLorean. No, I mean, what do you think of this?
Well, I mean, this is kind of I'm not surprised. And in our speculations, at one point we had been talking about the possibility that maybe they would conflate Azog and Bolg. That having Azog like be in the film for like 2 minutes, long enough, you know, in a flashback, just long enough to get killed off,
yeah,
and then having
flashback.
Bolg,
I totally, yeah. I was on board with the flashback, even though I didn't think it was too likely that we would see the Battle of Azanul Bazar because it was so kind of like confusing. But other people argue that, yeah, we're totally going to see this. But I never thought that Azog would be alive and that he would appear in the timeline of The Hobbit. Because we have Bolg, you know, we know that he's alive. So why do we need his father? But it's interesting. And then tying it to Gandalf's quest. This is going really kind of off track when it comes to the canon of the story.
Yeah, they're trying to knit everything together. I thought it was interesting. I mean, I guess the purist in me, you know, is horrified. But in reality, I don't think it has a real significant impact. Cause
you talk about the purist in you as Schmeagol inside Gollum.
Yes, there's two sides of me. Like, you know,
it's,
I mean,
terrible. No, it's not terrible. Yes, it's absolutely terrible. No, it's fine. No, it's not fine.
That's often how the conversations go, too, out loud.
You should turn that into a podcast.
Yes. So they're you know, like, they're kind of... It looks like they're sort of wantonly changing things, but on the other hand, I don't think that this is really a critical element to the story. Ultimately, if you're a purist and you're reading The Hobbit for the 80th time and you've already read through the appendices and you know all the story, then maybe you're filling in all these extra details as you read it. But if you just read The Hobbit itself, Bolg appears like he gets mentioned like in two sentences, and you never hear about him again until he's like dead, and it doesn't really matter. You know, it doesn't. You know that there's enmity between the dwarves and the goblins, and that they both have these. You know, it's like some of the conflicts in the Middle East that it goes so far back. You don't really know who's at fault anymore. It kind of doesn't really matter that much. So if they want to tweak it a little bit and have him not actually be dead and he's coming back for revenge instead of Bolg coming back for revenge, maybe they thought that makes it a slightly more interesting story. It adds to the mystery that Gandalf's investigating. You know, they really want to play up this mystery thing.
Yeah.
And so they're adding in the ring raids, and they're adding in Azog reappearing. Because mm-hmm. otherwise it's sort of – you know, it's hard to show on screen why are they so concerned about this necromancer guy. Like, what's going on there? All you know is like, oh, there's this power in Mirkwood and he's evil. But now they're adding in these concrete things that they can point to and say, well, the ringwraiths have escaped from their tomb and this Azog guy's reappeared. We thought he was dead. And that makes it a lot easier to sort of actually accumulate evidence that there's something going on.
True, true. There's lots more in this German version of the description of mm-hmm. the characters, including very revealing information about the relationship between Thranduil, Legolas, and Toriel. And that's definitely, I think, it warrants another discussion in perhaps in the next show where we can go over that and talk about the consequences. I think it's pretty interesting what they do with Legolas and his father and the way that they kind of bring him in a kind of natural way. And at the same time, I think it will give more kind of depth to the Legolas that we see in the Lord of the Rings trilogy. But we will probably have to talk about that in our next show. I will mm-hmm. be in the United States next week, so I'm not sure how we're going to do this. We might pre-record this, or I might record this when I'm in the States. It's going to be busy. I'll be in the Dallas-Fort Worth area. I'm going to be there for the Catholic New Media Conference, which you can find more information about on CatholicNewMediaConference.com. And so then the week after that, I will actually be in your neck of the woods. I'll be traveling to Los Angeles and to Boston. So in terms of doing our show, we're going to have to see what is possible and what not. But one thing is certain, we will return with new episodes of The Secrets of the Hobbit.
We'll be back again.
Absolutely. To wrap things up, do you want to plug the Middle Earth Radio Network and all that cool stuff that you guys are doing?
Well, the big thing I want to toss out is keep in mind that Hobbit Day is approaching September, ooh, I think, 22nd, Bilbo's birthday and all that. And I know the Middle Earth Network and the Tolkien Professor and some of those folks are plotting something. I don't know what yet, but keep your ears open. And we definitely want to get you involved, Father.
Hobbit Day. I'll be excited to get involved. Just want to give a quick shout out to all the other SQPN podcasters. And if you enjoyed this show, you might want to check out SQPN.com, where you will find an overview of all the other shows that we produce, where we're getting ready for a new season of kind of TV-related shows. We have a show about Once Upon a Time, which is this ABC series with fairy tales, and we did a first run of the first season, which you might enjoy if you're currently rewatching the series on TV or even on Blu-ray or DVD. You might want to check out our commentary. You will find that at onceuponatime.sqpn.com. We've got shows about, a lot of cool stuff, including Harry Potter and Star Wars and just way too much to mention here. Just go over to sqpn.com and in the menu you will find an entire list. Thanks for listening. We will see you soon. And till then, may the hair on your feet, etc.
SQPN, leading the way in Catholic New Media.